loyal listeners, and thank you for tuning in. We know how many great content is out there, so we are grateful for you choosing us today. In this episode, we will dive into disability. 1 billion people, that is 15% of the world's population, experience some form of disability. And disability prevalence is higher for developing countries. Between 110 million and 190 million people experience significant disabilities. People with disabilities are more likely to experience adverse socioeconomic outcomes, such as less education, poor health outcomes, lower levels of employment, and higher poverty rates. As COVID-19 continues to have wide-reaching impacts across the globe, it is important to note how people with disabilities are uniquely impacted by the pandemic, including health, education, and transport considerations. Poverty may increase the risk of disability through malnutrition, inadequate access to education, healthcare, unsafe working conditions, a polluted environment, a lack of access to safe water and sanitation. Disability may also increase the risk of poverty through lack of employment and education opportunities, lower wages, and increased cost of living with a disability. Soan Fernandez is our guest today. He has a strong track record working with multilateral banks, advising NGOs, social entrepreneurs, and government. This conversation will give you some insights on the issues with disability, how to navigate in this world as a disabled person, what are the companies that are helping to tackle these issues, what are the organizations that are walking the talk on disability inclusion. If you want to be an active advocate on disability inclusion, this episode is for you. Welcome to the Impactivist Podcast. Enjoy our conversation. Soan Fernandez, thank you for being with us today. You are an expert in innovation and entrepreneurship with strong academic studies in sustainability. You have worked with international bodies, advising social entrepreneurs, NGOs, and governments. Although you have a broad spectrum of expertise on various industries, today we will focus on disability and the solutions in the market that are helping to bring inclusion to this population. But first, before digging into this amazing topic, could you please share your story with us?
Hi, hello to everyone. Well, so my name is Soan. There is a lot of questions about my name. It's just the translation of John or Juan or Hans to Galician. Galicia is a region from Spain. I'm originally from there. In the last 12 years, I've been living in the Americas, in Chile, in Peru, in Colombia, in Washington, D.C. And also I studied in England, a master's degree in sustainable innovation for sustainable development. Basically, my career has been around innovation for development, mainly in multilateral development banks. The regular business, the business as usual of these organizations is normally to lend money to governments for large loans related to infrastructure or public reform. But these organizations, they have these small windows to work with NGOs, social entrepreneurs, hybrid organizations between social, private, and public. So most of my career has been there, creating and supervising projects with this kind of organizations. And I've worked in the past with the Inter-American Development Bank and also with CAF. CAF is less known, maybe, but it's also a very important multilateral development bank created by Latin American countries. And since 2019, I've been working as an external consultant for innovation for development with several organizations and several topics, such as migration, fintech, etc. But an important part of my portfolio of clients is related with disability. And I think this is the topic that anchors this conversation. So happy to share about my insights of my work and my previous experience. And thanks again for the invitation.
Thank you, Swan. And is there something, why does disability, I mean, why are you interested in disability? Was it just by coincidence that this topic just came, you know, in your path? Or is there something from your past that really made you work with social entrepreneurs that are creating solutions for this population?
I could say that most of my life is driven by coincidence and serendipity, right? I think like most of us is the case. So yeah, I started to work with disability because I found about one of my clients that is called Specialist Terne. We can talk about them later on. That is a very interesting social entrepreneurship initiative. And what surprised me the most was the fact that it depends a lot on the country and how you count it, right? But around 12% of the population has some disability. And 80% of the people with disability are living in developing countries. And of those 80%, UN calculates more or less that 80% of them are in poverty. And poverty is not the only problem for them. They have a very, very wide range of problems that go from, you know, access to tourism or access to love, because it's not easy to find a couple if you are a blind person or you are on a wheelchair. So the range of problems is very diverse. It's a huge part of the population. Another thing that I find very interesting about people with disabilities is that every one of us can get a disability because of traffic accident, because of a disease. And we cannot say that about other kind of vulnerabilities, right? You cannot be born with a different color of skin, or you cannot choose if you're in the family where you are born is rich or is poor, but everyone can get a disability. And another thing that is very interesting about the disability is that they have the sympathy of most people and most organizations. So no one denies the vulnerability of people with disability. But if you look at the funding that is available from international donors or large NGOs and this kind of specialized funding, you can see that it's not prioritary, right? There is not a lot of funding for them. And we are talking again about 12% of the population. So I would say that one of the main goals around disability is how to overcome the invisibility that they suffer. How can we change that? And how can we transform these people into a regular part of the population? So people who has problems, who has assets, who has ups and downs, etc., right?
And the figures you gave us are quite eye-opening. So you mentioned 12% of the population, mm-hmm. and 80% are in poverty, meaning that these people most probably don't have education, don't have access to, you know, the minimal resources. How do we tackle this problem? Because it means that these people that are in poverty not only have, of course, disability, but they have a range of other problems to face. How do you see that problem?
Yeah, I would nuance a little bit those figures in the sense that the figure that I gave was around developing countries, right? Because in many developing countries scenarios, having a disability is a sentence of poverty, right? Because there are not many adjustments, reasonable adjustments in companies. Most of the people in developing countries, especially if we talk about Latin America and Africa, they work in informal settings. So it is harder to, you know, to create an inclusive work environment unless we are talking about large companies, etc. But around 80-90% of people works in SMEs, right? In small and medium enterprises. And most of these companies in developing countries, they are not prepared to do these reasonable adjustments for people with disabilities. The other thing that I think is important to touch is that probably the hardest obstacle to overcome are social paradigms and social perspectives, right? Because we are used to see people with disabilities around what they cannot do, right? So we see a person with dark glasses and a white button, and we thought, okay, this person is blind, so he cannot drive a truck, right? But this person can do a lot of professions. The only professions that this person cannot do are the professions that require to see correctly. Or if we see a person in a wheelchair, we think, so this person cannot do this job or this other one, but it can be a really good, I don't know, programmer, for instance. So in my experience working with these social companies who work in the inclusion of people with disability, they tell me that when a recruiter in a company sees the CV of this person and starts to see the curriculum, so they call the person to the interview, but then the person gets to the room where the interview is, to the office of the company, and the interview goes really fast, right? Because maybe the position is for, I don't know, an administrative officer or a programmer. So it's a position that it doesn't need full mobility. But when the interviewers see the person, they just see the wheelchair. So they just see the people around what they cannot do, not around what they really are, right? Because everyone has limitations. And those limitations are just a part of what we are, right? And regarding your question about poverty, yes, poverty is much prevalent among people with disability. The average unemployment rate in Latin America of people with disability is 75%. It depends a lot on the age, and depends a lot of the kind of disability. For instance, with autism, it's around 85%. And then you have some disabilities that are partial or they are invisible. So these people are luckier. And maybe a final point of this is that, especially in developing countries, when someone has a disability, not only the person with the disability is affected, but many of the people who are in their families or in their context, right? Because maybe the mother or the grandmother or the sister has to take care of these people with disability.
And so I have a personal reflection about what you are saying, and it's related to how important we should be empathetic with the situation, because anybody is exempt of an accident. Mm-hmm. And after that, we can be in that situation. So it's also an issue of being empathetic and become sensible about this topic. I have a question, Swan, and it's related about the institutional support and funding. Mm-hmm. So what is the position of the governments and public institutions regarding this problematic?
Yeah, well, now again, we have to differentiate between developed and developing countries, right? So in developed countries, you have more lines of support, more funding, more programs, etc., right? And in developing countries, as you know, governments and organizations have too much on their plates, let's say. So you can see in countries in Latin America that there are many countries such as, for instance, Ecuador, Argentina, Brazil, and that have good laws with quotas of X percent of people with disabilities that have to be part of companies of a certain size. And you see that people with disabilities, they have rights that are different of the people with no disabilities, etc. But the problem is, how can you implement that, or how can you make a law be fulfilled, right? So one thing is intentions, and the other thing is what actually happens. And what actually happens is, like, we have this 75% of unemployment. As you know, for instance, in Latin America, there is not big welfare state that can provide for everyone. And this is a very, of course, long problem, a very large problem, etc. And people with disabilities are another victim among people that are vulnerable among them. Regarding private employers, I think that some of them, because they are part of multinationals. For instance, it comes to mind Accenture, or it comes to mind SAP. Companies of that size, they have a worldwide politics of inclusion, not only with people with disabilities, but also with LGBT people, gender politics, etc. So these multinationals are the ones that are leading the way in terms of really fulfilling their quotas, right? Local companies or even local multinationals, I think that most of them, at least I'm talking about the case of Latin America, they are not aware or they are not proactive in including people with disabilities.
So why they don't do or they don't work in the same way as the multinationals? What are the kind of barriers that maybe they have for working with people in this situation?
It is hard to me to answer that question, but maybe a possible answer can be that in many countries, the headquarters are in countries that really value diversity. And the countries where they come from, they have strong laws to promote diversity and to promote the integration of people with disability. Right? So you can see, for instance, American or Spanish multinationals, that because where the countries have the headquarters, in those countries, you can find laws and legislation that promotes or forces companies to hire people with disabilities. That initial step that is enforcing turns into a practice and a value that is accepted, right? And so maybe to answer your previous question, one way of getting to better results in terms of disabilities is sometimes to force quotas or to force some kind of minimum degree among certain companies on hiring people with disabilities, and with this to show that people with disabilities can be in positions where they are not supposed to be because they are blind or they are in a wheelchair. So people with disabilities, they can do any profession as long as their specific disability, it doesn't impede to do that job. So for instance, a blind person cannot drive a truck. That's common sense, but a blind person can do a lot of professions. And regarding developing countries, not all the developing countries are equal. I want to outline this. So for instance, Brazil, in many ways, is much more advanced in diversity policies for companies than other countries. So of course, the question in Brazil is around race. More or less half of the population of Brazil is black, and black is brutally underrepresented in large companies, especially in managerial positions. So in the past governments of Brazil, with Dilma Rousseff, with Lula, there were some law initiatives that promoted diversity and inclusion. And this diversity and inclusion for black people also benefit women, LGBTI, and people with disabilities. So probably one way also of promoting a larger rate of people with disabilities working in companies is to promote diversity in general terms, to have more women, to have more people of different races, of different ages, etc. Right? That also in business terms makes sense. And there is a lot of studies and research that proves that increasing diversity also tends to get increasing results.
I think it was very powerful what you explained about this person in the wheelchair. They have actually done a great job. They have a great CV. And all of a sudden, of course, they arrive to the meeting in the office and they have wheelchair, right? Mm-hmm. And the hiring manager all of a sudden sees the wheelchair, right? So that really shows that we're wired differently, that we have all this unconscious bias within us, right? Mm-hmm. And how can we start seeing things differently? How can we start giving opportunities to these people? Tell us about the skills they have, because sometimes they have better skills than normal people without disabilities have, right? And that we really don't know about. So that's my first question, is tell us a little bit more about those amazing skills that these people have. Mm-hmm. for example, for when they're coding or things like that. And then the second one is to rewire our brains to unlearn what we have learned and open a little bit our minds to include this population that we have forgotten about. I know you're also working with companies in branding and, you know, showing that this, you know, what these people can bring to the table. So tell us a little bit about those two points.
Yeah. Around maybe your second question, I think that if we see in the past, and I'm talking about maybe the 1980s or the 1970s, if you see large companies, large multinationals all around the world, probably the non-administrative staff was 90% men or 90-something percent men. So now we find this unbelievable and we find this appalling, right? Also, for instance, recently the new governor of Saudi Arabia approved the fact that women could drive, right? And this was celebrated, but at the same time was there were a lot of commentaries saying, okay, but it was about time, you know. But in Spain, where I come from, in 1975, 1976, and this is just 50 years ago, women had to ask for permission to get a driver license, to open a bank account, to buy a new house, right? Society changed when these kind of groups that are minorized or discriminated in some way, they become visible. So when these groups of populations turn visible and you can see that, okay, yes, a woman can be the president of a bank, a woman can drive a car, a woman can buy a house by herself. So you normalize something that this should be normal. And probably it's also the case with people with disabilities, because there is a lot of shame around disability. And this shame is shared by the people with disability and also by their families in some cases. So having a relative with disability is like having a dark secret in the family. Someone that was born wrongly, so you had to hide the mistake, and it shouldn't be the case. Going to your first question, it is true that in general, diversity is good. In general, we have to find ways to apply that diversity. So along history, there has been cases of people who had disabilities that took advantage of the limitations to do a better job. So for instance, in many countries, it was traditional that blind people could be massagists. They could give masses because when you lose a sense, the other senses become stronger. With that, the blind people, when they touch, they have a deeper perception than us. In my past work in the Inter-American Development Bank, I found a project with a local NGO, and the local NGO was providing people that were deaf to work in a company who did a package for medicines. And the managers were super happy because these deaf people could focus much, much better because they were not distracted by conversation. They were not distracted by the noise of the factory, and their sense of touch was much better. And related with one of the companies that I'm working with called Specialisten, with a concept called neurodiversity. Maybe, Maria, do you want me to delve into that?
Yeah, I think Andresa has a question before, but yes, afterwards, absolutely. Neurodiversity is an amazing topic you actually taught me, and I would love our listeners to learn more about that. But Andres, to you before.
Yes, Juan, I wanted to outline when you were talking about when we never imagined inclusion in the 70s or maybe the 80s. And I wanted to say that it's not just creating the opportunities, it's creating opportunities, but of quality, good opportunities. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, you know, in Ecuador, we have a president that he has a disability. And why not? We can imagine a CEO that maybe is a blind people, but maybe with a strong leadership skills. So mm-hmm. I think that is we need to change the paradigm, and we need to maybe to start thinking in a different way, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people with disabilities, but with amazing skills that they can do many important roles in organizations, in the government, in the civil society. Also, there are too many roles that they can do, and we are not perceiving that. This is what I wanted to comment.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I also think that we have to be careful in the sense like people with disabilities are not exceptional in any way. In the sense like you have maybe in the people with non-disabilities, 20% of the people are exceptional and 80% of us, we are not, right? So I think it's also the case with people with disabilities. The problem is when you don't have any opportunity to show who you are. And I think that's the problem. Or when society denies that you exist, right? And society can deny that you exist in many ways. For instance, not providing you the means of doing regular and routine actions. So for instance, in one of the projects that I'm working on, we are analyzing the financial system in Mexico City. Many blind people are forced to sign papers in hard copy with documents, but they cannot know for sure what they are signing, right? So I wouldn't sign a bank document if I could read it. So people that are blind are forced to do that. And if you, so and regarding your previous question, like maybe it's not so much about quotas, maybe it's about that if I'm a deaf person, I should be able to go to a hospital and be able to communicate with the doctor or with the nurses without fearing that I'm not going to be able to communicate because there is no one who cannot read lips or because you cannot find an interpreter of signs, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And let's speak about the concrete solutions because there's actually people that are creating solutions to bring inclusivity to this population. So Ixuan, tell us about the companies you're working with.
Yeah. So maybe to illustrate some of the points that we did before, I'm going to talk about Specialisterne. Specialisterne is a company that was founded in Denmark 17 years ago. And it was founded by a man called Thorkild Sonne, who used to work in the technology industry as a software engineer, if I remember well. So Thorkild Sonne has a son with autism. And one day when his son was 7 or 8, he found a strange picture, a strange drawing made by his son. And this drawing was like a grid full of numbers and strange designs. So Thorkild was thinking about this design for days until he realized that the picture was describing a map of roads of Europe. He took his family during the summer to go to Italy, I think. So this kid that had very serious problems of integration at his school, and we are talking about Denmark, we are not talking about a poor country, he was able to reproduce exactly a map with more than, I think, 128 squares and with more than 500 codes. So
amazing.
This kid has a lot of abilities to memorize, to find patterns, to be focused on details. And these are skills that, in general terms, people with autism has more than people that has no autism, right? So most of us are aware of all the challenges that people with autism has in their daily lives. Problems of communications, problems of understanding social interactions, etc. But they are very good at focusing on details, doing routine things. They are very honest. So again, it's not about seeing people about what they cannot do, because we all three, maybe we are very good in our jobs, but it would be a disastrous doing other jobs. So why we focus on what people with autism cannot do. So Thorkild decided to quit his job and to create a company called Specialisterne. Specialisterne means the specialists in Danish. And what specialist learning does is to train people with autism that they normally have around 80-85% of unemployment. Most of the people with autism, they got their first job when they are in their 30s in many cases, even if they have university careers or they have masters or PhDs, they have a really, really hard time finding a job. The most recent studies about autism and Asperger say that around between 1-2% of the population are in the spectrum of autism. We have to explain that autism is not like COVID. You have COVID or you don't have because it's a virus. So autism is a diagnostic. So there are people with autism that are very functional, or their disability can be hidden even for themselves. And there are other people who cannot do anything, that are in a very bad shape. So what the specialist learner does is an intensive training program with people with disabilities, with autism and Asperger, and they train them in socio-emotional skills, such as communication, such as conflict resolution. They also train them in technical skills defined by the client, but normally around software testing, hardware testing, data analysis, etc., and how to relate with colleagues at the office. So after a process of 4 months of training, they are ready to work in companies. So specialist learning does the training and does the connection between the people with autism and the companies who need talent. And what kind of talent is suitable for people with autism? Well, positions in very high demand and normally quite well paid, such as software testing, cybersecurity analyst, data analyst, and BPO positions, data management, administrative positions. This person can do it very well with the right training. And this position has a lot of turnover, and they are quite difficult to recruit sometimes. So it's a win-win between companies who need this talent and cannot find it, and people with autism that are very good. Another great thing about people with autism is that for whatever reasons, they are quite loyal to their companies. So in the technology sector, there is a lot of turnover of people who are constantly changing of company. But for instance, we've been working with SAP for 10 years. And in 10 years, the rate of permanence of people with autism is 92%. When normally in a position of this kind, there is a turnover of 25% every year, and it can be worse in many cases. So specialist learner does the training, does the recruitment, does the training not only of the people with autism, but also of their colleagues, of their managers. We create awareness about the advantage of working with people with autism. There are some examples that are maybe anecdotes, but I think they are worthy of sharing here. Like, for instance, we have a person working at IBM in Sao Paulo, and there was a mathematical problem in a blackboard. So this person proposed a solution to this problem, and this problem had been in the blackboard maybe for 2 years. And after the data scientists of IBM follow the lead that this person suggested, the problem was solved in 2 weeks. With this, I don't want to say people with autism are genius or most of them are genius. That is not the case. But what is the case is that their brain is wired in a very different way than most of the people. So they can see things differently. They can have a different sense of how to do things. And with this increasing diversity, teams can find different solutions and can have different tools in the company to solve problems.
I love those stories. And I love that those are really concrete examples of how this population, I don't know if we should call them disability, because at the end of the day, they're not disability. You know, when you tell me those stories, I don't see them as disabled. So it's difficult to name them, right? But knowing that these big companies, I mean, you mentioned SAP, you mentioned IBM, you mentioned, I think, JP Morgan, you also worked with them. So they are actually open. They have really identified that these people do bring a value add. So it's great. There's a big, huge best practice that we can learn from these companies and their hiring practices, right?
Yeah. So in fact, companies such as Deloitte, they have now a specific line of working with people with autism, how to take advantage of neurodiversity in general. We can talk about neurodiversity later on if you want. Also, JP Morgan, they have a very strong and large diversity program, and part of that is with autism. The best client of Specialisterne is SAP. After working with Specialisterne, SAP created its own program called Autism. I think the name, sorry, I cannot remember. I think the name is Autism Speaks, where they committed to have 1% of their staff with autism working for them. Seeing recruiting talent with autism, not as something that we have to do or something that is fair, but something that is strategic for the company. How can increment the level of people with autism and Asperger in our company, because that is going to give us better results. Another company that is a very good client of us is IBM. And IBM also has also a specific program about autism. So more and more companies are working in this field of how to take advantage of autism and neurodiversity, that is a wider range of psychological diagnostics, let's say.
So just a question. In case of a company wants to create a program or develop a program, as you describe it, that means that you can provide support developing that or designing the program for inclusion?
In the very specific case of Specialisterne and people with autism, Specialisterne does a lot of the tasks involved, because it's not easy, and we have to recognize this, it's not easy to work with people with autism. It has a lot of challenges, and that explains partially why many organizations that work in the space of people with disability, they didn't dare to deal with people with autism. So for instance, if you want to increase the number of people who are in a wheelchair in your company, you have to adapt the infrastructure of your office, and that's it, right? Or if you are talking about people that are blind, maybe with a special software, you are done. But with people with autism, you have to, what Specialisterne does is a project with the company where we work with the human resources department, with the managers, with the colleagues, etc. And after 9 months or 1 year, the person that were hired by the company, they are ready to fly solo, let's say. In the future, in Specialisterne, we would like to create capabilities in all these large companies for them to routinely recruit and manage people with autism, right? So the ideal thing to happen, it would be like JP Morgan has a team of human resources that are specialized in recruiting and managing people with autism. And all the managers know how to deal with people with autism. And yeah, and Specialisterne, if the question was around this, the business model or what we do is to give support to these companies in every step of the process, with the recruiting of people with autism, with the training of the people that are working in the company, of the managers, doing the coaching for the people with autism, etc. But the process normally takes around 1 year. So autism is a diagnostic, is a condition that is part of a group of other diagnostics and other conditions that are related with the brain, right? So when Maria told that to me, this is not a diversity. So you think about this, something that is a diversity is because it's not common. So if 90% of the people were blind, we would be the people with disability, right? Because we would be the strange guys. So there is around 10% of the population who has neurodiversity. And neurodiversity are these conditions that where the brain is wired in a different way that is normally wired. So for instance, people with dyslexia, many of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world, they have dyslexia. So for instance, it comes to mind Richard Branson. Why? This is because if you have dyslexia, you cannot read normally in the school, and you have a lot of difficulties that people normally don't have. So some of the people with the dyslexia, they develop strategies to overcome these difficulties, and they create a very entrepreneurial set on them. But unfortunately, most of the people with dyslexia, they don't become super successful entrepreneurs, and they can fail at school or a job because society don't know how to take advantage of their abilities. Another example of neurodiverse disorder is the Tourette syndrome, or another example is people who have difficulties reading or people who have difficulties computing numbers. But if you have difficulties computing numbers, sometimes you become very good with words, and the other way around, when you are very good with words, you become, when you are very bad with words, you become very good with numbers. So the idea here is that there is nothing inherently wrong with these people. They are just different. But society haven't learned how to take advantage of this difference. So if we think about a player of the NBA, right? Someone who is 2 meters height, or 2 meters and 10 centimeters. So for most of the part of history, that person would be almost a disabled, right? Because infrastructure and jobs and families were not prepared to deal with this kind of people, because most of the people were significantly smaller. So there is something similar happening here. Now, society haven't learned how to deal with autism, for instance, because among other reasons, autism has been very underdiagnosed until recently. So many people with diagnosed, well, they were considered retarded or crazy, and they were locked down on sanitaries, on asylums, and we were wasting a very precious talent. So yeah, that I think is in a nutshell neurodiversity, and it's a very interesting way of seeing disability. I have an anecdote. I was talking with a possible founder of a specialist learning of an international organization, and he asked me to explain to him what was neurodiversity. And I explained, and I gave this example of dyslexia. And he told me, I am dyslexic. And he has been a very successful, at least professionally, person. So I could see in his face how stunning was for him to see himself as a person with disability, because he was lucky enough to were born in a family, in a system where his difference could be appreciated. And this guy is very good with numbers, for instance. And he's a very capable person in the professionally speaking. So it was to me very illustrating how sometimes we tag people instead of seeing that everyone is different. Everyone has the different assets and different limitations. So we should focus on what people can bring to the society instead of focusing on what they cannot, no? And coming back to previous points that I made, I think this is part of the answer, right? If you see people with disabilities as sick people, vulnerable people, poor people, you are not going to be able to transform the paradigm of society because they are condemned to be a marginal group. And we don't want to do that because marginal groups are to be in the margins, and people with disabilities should be another different part of people, like being a woman or a man, or being straight, or being LGBT, or being black or not being black.
Oh, Zoran, this was so inspiring. We could continue speaking hours with you.
Okay.
And you still have other solutions that we weren't able to talk about. So we will invite you again soon. But something that we should all, that you have actually mentioned several times.
Uh-huh.
And so let's leave with that, is why focus on the things that you cannot do and rather shift mindset and think about the things that this disability community can do. And I think there we can bring some change in the way we think.
Yeah, I think that's a great takeaway, and I'm happy if I could transfer that message to you guys.
Thank you, Zoran, and all the best continuing helping these amazing social entrepreneurs to make the world a better place, bringing inclusion to the world.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Why are we focusing on what a disabled person cannot do? Why don't we focus on all the other things that she or he is capable of doing? Yet another important topic that we need to tackle together as an entrepreneur or in our corporate roles while hiring or persuading leadership to do something about it. 1 billion people have a disability. What an opportunity to innovate and create initiatives to help tackle this issue globally. What an opportunity for investors, for impact investors, to join the club. Thank you for listening. We hope you got some takeaways that can help you be more aware of this issue and hopefully inspire you to take action. At Impactivist, we're concerned of what we're seeing today, particularly in developing countries. The inequality and social issues are just too complex to being solved by the government alone. We believe you and me can solve these issues with leadership. Let's understand the system, the issues, and work together, civil society, to innovate. Let's be bold. Let's become impact leaders that won't wait for government or global organizations to do something. There's a ton of things to do. Social innovation is the way, and you can start now, just where you are. As an entrepreneur, as an unemployed person, as a person in the corporate world, as an investor. If you want to be part of our podcast series or know any impact leader that inspires you, contact us at connect@impactivist.global. We would love to hear from you. Thank you for choosing us today. Until the next time.